This episode is brought to you by the Cambie Liquor Store. With their ever-growing selection of spirits, beers, and local wines, as well as some awesome gifts that you can't find anywhere else, there's so much more than your average liquor store. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to the Cambie Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The city on Wednesday night approved the Strategic Investment Zone application for Columbia Distributing's new 530,000 square foot facility in the Cambie Industrial Park. This occurred in a protracted and, at times, contentious meeting between councilors and city staff, which happened virtually thanks to the coronavirus pandemic. The 4-2 decision, with councilors Greg Parker and Sarah Spoon voting against, clears the way for the application to go before the Business Oregon Commission. The commission has the final say and is expected to review the matter at their next meeting in May. If approved, Columbia would receive a 15-year abatement on property taxes due over the $25 million mark in assessed value. Estimates from Clackamas County say the program would save the company, which is the country's fourth largest beverage distributor, almost $7 million in property taxes over the next 15 years, though 25% of that must be returned to the taxing districts in the form of a community service fee. For Councillor Parker, a big problem was that the SIZ program calls for recipients to make a good faith effort to use local contractors. That's the main reason the state requires the application to be approved before construction in the first place. In this case, of course, that's not going to be possible.
If we're going to go back to the original agreement, that there are four benefits that come to a community for engaging in this process. And one of them is the establishment of an office in the county that works with the applicant to make sure that there is a good faith effort for contracting to local businesses. That cannot happen when the building's already built. You know, that's part of the absurdity, and I think the community kind of sees that, is that how can we benefit once the building's already built?
The signing of a first source local contracting agreement was also one of the local prereqs that were set forth when Cambie and Clackamas County first established the county's Rural Strategic Investment Zone in 2010. Council President Tim Dale said he was troubled by that as well. He also found it problematic that most of the taxing districts who will be impacted by the abatement, including Cambie Fire and Cambie Schools, have no say in the decision.
Looking through the record, I think they expressed intent to partake in the SIZ. I'm happy to let Business Oregon deal with the deadline portion. The two things that really, really bother me is this is just a really horrible piece of legislation, how it's been written. It's extremely confusing. What's offensive to me is that not all the taxing districts are represented as part of the application process. So in particular, Clackamas Community College, Canby School District, and Canby Fire are not participants except through us and the county. To me, that seems grossly unfair.
Council President Dale said that for him, outside of the discrepancies that are unique to this application, it really comes down to whether the city supports the use of the SIZ as a tool to attract large projects. Though he did not go into detail, he did confirm there are other interested parties in the pipeline who would also like to take advantage of the SIZ, and pulling out of the program could mean the loss of these or other opportunities. With the national, state, and local economies already feeling the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic, now may not be the time to be shedding tools for economic and business development, according to the council president. Councillor Spoon explained that she was voting no because of the precedent it would set. Both the city and county routinely expect businesses and individuals to do their own due diligence in understanding the rules and following them. The guidelines in this case were perfectly clear, she said, and making exceptions for one of the largest companies in the state would be, in her words, government at its worst.
I think allowing this to move forward is government at its worst. It's a bunch of bureaucrats deciding that a large corporation should get a tax exemption, regardless of what the law says, regardless of the fact that the company made an error of negligence on their own account. Locally, we expect our small business owners, our small family-owned businesses, to jump through expensive hoops that cost them significant amounts of time and money. Just this last fall, we had a business that was held up for weeks because of a requirement that seemed insignificant and like it really shouldn't have applied to them, but it cost them a lot of money and it threatens their business. But here we are talking about letting a multi-million dollar company from another town get away without following the rules at all.
I think they're as obligated as everybody else to follow the rules and accept the consequences if they don't, Councillor Spoon concluded. Councillor Parker, the other nay vote, said he would be opposing the application as a matter of common sense.
If I don't pay my parking ticket on time, it doubles. If I don't get my books back to the library, I get a fine. There are rules. And when staff initially presented us with this information, they gave us a copy of the application. And at the top of it, in bold, it said, this must be filled out before construction begins. What I am afraid of is that this comes across as us simply defying common sense, that all of us have to live by rules. And there is a simple rule, and no one yet has been able to explain to me why a $500 million corporation couldn't read boldface type.
But the arguments did not persuade the majority of the council, who seemed to feel Columbia had kept their side of the bargain, at least in the spirit of the law, if not the letter. They also seemed to fear a chilling effect on the recruitment of other large companies, with the economy now on the brink of a likely recession. If the state approves the company's application for the SIZ, it will then be up to the city, Canby Fire, and Canby School District to determine how the revenue from the community service fee will be spent during the next 15 years. Council President Dale expressed several times that he would support the city's share being allocated to the fire district, which has been an increasingly vocal opponent to the proposed tax abatement. Willamette Egg Farms, located about 7 miles south of town on Canby-Markham Highway, has confirmed that one of its employees tested positive for the new coronavirus last month. Said company spokeswoman Lisa Hanley, quote, "We did recently have an employee test positive for COVID-19. In accordance with CDC guidelines and working hand-in-hand with Clackamas County Health Department, we followed our procedures for safely managing the situation to protect our employees," end quote. Hanley said that the employee followed all quarantine protocols, recovered, and had been cleared by the health department to return to work. Other staff, who worked closely with the individual, also self-quarantined for the recommended 14 days. According to sources speaking on condition of anonymity, the employee was not a truck driver, but worked inside one of the facilities on Canby-Marquam Highway. The individual did not have direct contact with the public or food products, they said. The FDA's position on food safety remains that there is no evidence of food or food packaging is associated with the transmission of COVID-19, Hanley said. At this critical time, when food is needed worldwide, we are following Oregon State and CDC guidelines to continue to safely and quickly produce our products, end quote. Started as a small family farm in 1934, Willamette is now the state's largest commercial egg producer and has been a longtime leader in the industry push towards cage-free hen housing. Post Holdings, Inc., a St. Louis-based company whose products include the Post brand breakfast cereals, purchased Willamette from family owners Gordon Satram and his son Greg Satram in 2015. They produce fresh shell eggs, which are available in various sizes and retail options in grocery stores, hard-boiled eggs, and liquid eggs, which are generally marketed wholesale to the food service and hospitality industries. In a March 16th message from Robert Vitel, president and CEO of Post Holdings, the company promised to follow the principles of safeguarding employee health, maintaining supply chain continuity, and protecting employees from economic hardship in its decision-making related to the pandemic. If you are sick, please respect and follow quarantine protocols, Vitel told employees. Do not hesitate to get tested if you are experiencing symptoms, and we will provide paid leave during that entire cycle. We will not ask people to use sick days or paid time off when they are impacted by COVID-19. The message from the CEO did not address Willamette Egg specifically, noting that their plans are going to require a customized approach for each business with Post Holdings, as each business faces different challenges, end quote. Canby Herald sports writer Derek Wiley and reporter Carol Rawson were two of the almost two dozen journalists laid off last week by Pamblin Media Group, which owns the Herald, the Portland Tribune, and most of the other local weeklies in the metro area. According to Willamette Week, the cuts included about 40 of the company's 200 employees, half of them being newsroom staff. Our sources tell us virtually all of the layoffs were either sports writers or ad salespeople, which does make some brutal sense at a time when sports are canceled, as are major events and most other things about which you would advertise. The casualties included veteran sports writer Carrie Eggers, who covered the Trailblazers for the Tribune, among other beats, and who had spent almost half of his 45-year career with the paper. It's been another lousy day in newspaper world, longtime PMG sports editor Miles Vance said on Twitter at the end of what some had already dubbed Bloody Thursday. To be honest, it's the worst day I've seen in 33 years that I've worked for newspapers. Wiley, who covered not only all Canby High sports, but also Malala, Wilsonville, Colton, confirmed last Thursday night that his job was among those lost. Wiley joined the Herald in July 2019 following the departure of Tanner Russ. Rosin was the lively city government reporter for both the Canby Herald and Malala Pioneer. Before moving to Oregon, she lived in Central California where she worked for the Mercury News in San Jose and the Santa Cruz Sentinel. The losses cut the editorial staff of both the Herald and Pioneer effectively in half, with their newsrooms now consisting of only editor John Baker and assistant editor Kristen Wollers. In an emotional column posted to the newspaper's website Friday morning, Baker wrote that his heart is heavy from the losses. These were good people who did good work in often impossible situations, he said. They fought through the tough times and continued to care about the communities they were engaged in, and so often were left unappreciated. Baker said the layoffs left him torn between anger and lingering despair. Good people shouldn't have bad things happen to them, he said. And yet, as many of you know, in this current climate, that's exactly what's happening. In the column, Baker also announced a fundamental shift to how Pamplin will cover several of its communities, including Canby. Starting next week, the cities of Mallala, Canby, Woodburn, and Newburg will be served by a single newspaper. It will have a new name and feature a compilation of stories from those communities and include virtually no sports. Oregon has sent 140 life-saving ventilators from its state stockpile to assist in the COVID-19 relief efforts in hard-hit New York State. New York has seen more than 122,000 confirmed cases and at least 4,159 deaths. Oregon, on the other hand, has just seen over 1,000 cases and only 27 deaths as of Sunday morning. We'll be sending 140 ventilators to help New York because Oregon is in a better position right now, Governor Kate Brown said in her tweet announcing the decision Saturday. We must do all that we can to help those on the front lines of this response, end quote. In a follow-up tweet, Brown admitted her state is still lacking in the personal protective equipment, or PPE, and testing capacity we need to address our own COVID crisis. But, quote, we can help today with ventilators. We are all in this together, end quote. The majority of COVID-19 cases are mild, but for those that are more serious, the inflammation from the virus can cause a condition called acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS, which results in the lining of the patient's lungs being smothered. It's essentially a form of drowning. For those suffering from ARDS, the one hope for saving their lives is a mechanical ventilator that forces oxygen into the body. Ventilators don't cure COVID-19, but they can keep patients alive long enough for their immune system to deal with the virus. New York, the hardest hit state in the country thus far, also received 1,000 ventilators from the Chinese government this weekend as cases continue to climb. Without more of the life-saving breathing machines, Governor Andrew Cuomo estimated his state's death toll could reach 16,000. Governor Cuomo expressed gratitude in response to Oregon's gesture of kindness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, he tweeted. New York State will repay the favor when Oregon needs it. Just a few days after Canby School District Superintendent Tripp Goodall sent a message to families advising them what Canby schools would look like amid the COVID closures, the Oregon Department of Education, or ODE, without warning, sent new guidance to Goodall and the state's other superintendents that changed everything. The new guidance essentially requires schools to resume classes by mid-April, albeit at a distance. ODE called for the implementation of distance learning for all, a robust new teaching and learning platform that would most likely use not just online education, but also paper assignments sent through mail and phone or video calls. ODE has instructed school districts to launch their distance learning models by April 13th. Goodall says Canby schools are developing a plan, figuring out logistics, distributing technology, and determining how to best deliver instruction outside of the classroom. The biggest question on the minds of many parents and students is about high school seniors, including new graduation requirements, and whether major ceremonies and prom will be allowed. Those are questions for ODE, not Canby School District, Goodall said. Once we have that information, we will be able to answer more specific questions about what third trimester will look like, Goodall said. I want to assure you we will partner with our families around graduation requirements and to make sure our 9 through 11 grade students remain on track. The district expects to send out information outlining Canby's Distance Learning for All model next week. This will include plans for online and offline learning with a consistent, predictable schedule. While the district had been working to enhance out-of-classroom learning opportunities since early March, the new directive from ODE required them to rethink much of their planning, Goodall admitted. Markey said, quote, districts were given 14 days to develop an entirely new instructional model in the middle of a global pandemic. We will rise to the challenge. We appreciate your patience as we do.
The Cambi Now podcast is brought to you in part by DirectLink, where technology meets tradition. Cambi's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Cambi Now Plus member Vicki Adamson. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit cambinowpod.com/plus.
All right, joining us on the line now for the Cambi conversation is Kyle Lang, the director of the Cambi Area Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Tyler.
Hey, how's it going? Anything new?
There are many things new.
Oh my gosh, how have things been with the chamber this past crazy month?
Well, we're doing well. I have actually really felt good and actualized as a chamber.
Yeah.
I feel like we're in the trenches and doing exactly what it is that a chamber exists to do, which is support local business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, definitely don't feel unneeded, huh? At this is right. When something like this is going on.
Right. My phone and my email account have never been as busy.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, tell us some of the, just maybe some of the highlights, some things that you would want to share about. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, how are the local businesses that they love and support, how's the Cambi business community doing? What's your pulse?
Well, you know, everybody is chin up
right
now as much as they can, and they're being as agile, as hopeful, and as responsive as anybody could be in a situation like this. Which isn't to say that it is without hardship and without hard decisions and tough decisions and right.
Yeah.
Most of our local small business owners, you know, employees are more than just employees. They're family, right? They help them sustain a family business.
Yeah.
And so when those employment choices come up and we really need to make hard calls, it weighs heavy on their hearts. You know, it's not without a degree of responsibility that they make tough decisions.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not sort of, you know, the chairman of the board calling from, you know, 10,000 feet up in the skyscraper, you making dispassionate decisions. It's very much closer than that. Can I ask real quick, Kyle, are you jogging or something? We're here.
Am I jogging? I'm getting my steps in.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like on the other end of this call is just like a Rocky training montage going on without the soundtrack, but everything else.
I'm feeling the eye of the tiger for sure. My brother is going to be super happy that I dropped that reference, by the way.
Right. So are you doing, and maybe we'll have to find someone else to address this part of the call in a later episode, but obviously there are a lot of folks that are dealing with layoffs and unemployment. Is that something that you've been too involved with or just more on the business owner and that kind of those types of resources?
No, not at all. I mean, the Cambi Area Chamber takes a holistic approach to taking care of the business environment.
Okay.
And it's not just business owners. It's the people who work for the businesses as well.
Yeah.
Because if we don't take care of the employees and the folks who work in these businesses, then the businesses don't stand.
Right.
So unemployment benefits, I mean, there's logjam. You know, no easier way to say it than that. Unprecedented levels of new claims in unemployment insurance. The employment department is working as fast as they can to process those claims to make sure.
I hear they're looking to hire, ironically.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, just if you think about it, the sheer volume, that's not the only sector that's looking to hire. I've heard that in terms of SBA, they're looking for people with finance experience that they can get up and running very quickly.
Sure.
In order to process the sheer volume of loans and loan to grant programs that are going to have to pass through the system in a very short time.
Right, right, right. And so, a lot more of those coming for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Let's just say the phone lines are busy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, we do have the federal program of the extra $600 going to those folks who, once their claim is processed, will be able to get that money and make sure that they're able to keep their households afloat. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the concern is that we will have multiple unemployed folks in a single household.
Right, right.
And so that extra credit is meant to make sure that we don't sink entire households of folks. So that's meant to be a relief to those folks.
Okay.
In general. But it is coming. But this is an expansion of a public service that hasn't had to expand this quickly in such a short amount of time. So there's going to be growing pains.
Right, right. Yeah, you see a lot of callbacks kind of in comparison to the last Great Recession that we went through back in 07, 08, that time period. And at least right now, I mean, it's looking like it could be just as bad, but it's, as you've alluded to, it's happening so much quicker. I mean, we sort of saw the signs and read the writing on the wall for a much longer period of time before it finally hit, whereas this was just, I mean, we weren't talking about any of this stuff 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, not at all. And the sheer amount of federal aid and cash that's infusing our economy. This rapid of a deployment of this kind of dollars is unprecedented.
Right.
And they're trying as hard as they can to be of help and to be of relief. But, it's a Herculean task.
Sure. Sure. Well, to look, I guess, a little more broadly real quick, we'll put a list of all these different kind of resources, links. You've been sending us a lot. We'll put those in the show notes. So if folks are listening and are like, I think we might need to look into that, check out the show notes for this episode, and you can hopefully find some help for you and your family. But you had a call this past week when folks are hearing this, right, Kyle, with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Association or something like that?
Yes.
How was that?
I've been on conference calls with the U.S. Chamber, FEMA, Homeland Security, the SBA, local representatives.
Talking to Obama and Trump and all them, right?
Representative Christine Drazen.
Oh, okay.
Senator Merkley. Yeah. Yeah. Those types of folks.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But
anything to share for our local listeners?
In terms of things to share, you know, the applications for the Paycheck Protection Program basically just got finalized, and lenders are accepting applications. There is a little bit of rule defining in terms of that program that needs to be concrete and firmly settled before those loans will process.
Okay.
So I just want to kind of delineate between institutions that are accepting Paycheck Protection Program applications and those that are processing those applications. And until rules are in place, lenders need to be careful, because this is 100% federally guaranteed program. And if they do it wrong, they might not get the 100% federal guarantee attached to the loan. And so that leaves banks in a precarious spot in terms of being on the hook for part of the guarantee. So they just need to make sure that everything's in place, I's dotted, T's crossed, but that should be done in sooner. Let's just say sooner. I'm not even going to say it later. it'll be done soon.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, hard to make promises in this kind of environment, right? Hard to make any kind of prediction or anything.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, it changes on a dime. And I've been on a conference call in the morning where I get one bit of information, and I'm on a conference call in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And, you
and
know,
it's, and, it's, and it's completely different, right?
Right. And it's the same speaker.
Right, right.
It's it's like the same person from the SBA, or it's the same person from the U.S. Chamber. And they're like, oh, hold on. Something changed since this morning.
Right, right.
So it's definitely shifting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this past week, again, or last week when folks are listening to this, Governor Brown came out with her latest order as far as protection from commercial evictions for business owners if they're unable to basically they can't be evicted for non-payment related to the coronavirus epidemic or the fallout from that. Is that something that you can share much insight into? Or I know there's kind of been some concerns. Well, what about the landlords? What about the property owners? Is that something you've been fielding questions on as well that you can share any insight?
A little bit. We understand both sides of the equation. We understand that small businesses, you know, that who have had to shutter and don't have revenue coming in, rent and those types of expenses are a huge burden to carry. We also understand that many property owners, that is their living income.
Right.
It isn't necessarily just, you know, Scrooge McDuck jumping into his coffers of money, but this is how they live, is by being a commercial landlord.
Right.
And so we need to make sure that we're doing enough to protect both parties, and finding ways that both business models can weather the storm and come out the backside successful.
Right, right. Because we're going to need them in the brave new world when this is all finally behind us, right?
Right, right. It, but you know what? There are so many positives. If I could shift gears just kind of briefly.
Please. Yeah, I'm all up for some positives. Let's do it.
Yeah, so, you know, in talking with our local businesses, we've also heard some amazing testimonials to giving. People who are not laid off and busy at work, and both people in their households are working, are generously buying gift cards through businesses and then donating it back to the community. And we heard a series of these stories over time, and it was so lovely that the chamber developed a program called Gift Cards for Giving. And what we're urging people who can to do is to purchase gift cards at local businesses and donate them back to the community. Now, some people can't get out or don't feel comfortable coming out. Tanker's going to do is we will be that bridge in between the local business and the charity, between the nonprofit and the business. We'll make sure that those resources get delivered. And so, you know, we're urging people to buy, you know, grocery and restaurant gift cards, absolutely, but also thinking of other needs that nonprofits and charities might have in terms of maybe cleaning supplies or hardware. You know, maybe buy a gift certificate to Candy Builder Supply or to Ace Hardware to supply those needs. Donate a gift certificate to the local bookstore, to Canby School District. You know, there's all kinds of ways. What I urge people to do is really get a hold of the charitable institution of their choice and ask them what they need. And then buy that gift card locally. And so not only are you helping the local business environment, but you're also helping the charity of your choice.
Yeah.
And this can go to... you know, you can also donate to first responders and, you know, fire and police and, you know, buy the police department lunch at a local restaurant, any way that this can be applied.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure that those resources get delivered.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think that's so awesome. And, you know, like when times are hard, when people are going through it, you never know how just like a careless word can be magnified so much more, you know, like something that would normally, you know, be no big deal can really, really hit you when you're having a hard time. And a small act of kindness is that same way, you know, like where in a good time, we, you know, people are generous anyway, and those things, you know, still make an impact, but they don't stand out quite as much as they can right now, where you can really change somebody's entire life, you know, just with a small act of kindness in this difficult time that many people are going through. I think that one of the stories that might have inspired this, Kyle, I heard about from the Wild Hare, your former stomping grounds,
exactly.
That someone had just who wanted to be left anonymous had gone into, I think, pick up some food and bought $1,000 worth of gift cards and just left them there for anybody to use, anybody in need. Is that, did I get those details right?
Yeah, for the most part. And the thing that was great and what caused me to start thinking about gift cards for giving is that Joan, posted a social media post because she was so overwhelmed by the kindness of it.
Yeah.
That shortly thereafter, another company came in and bought 500. Hmm. And then, the one act of kindness prompted another. When people were cued that this is a way they could help from a distance, from, without having to, expose themselves, etc.
Right.
And so, once the idea was there, it germinated and it caused another act of kindness and another act of kindness.
Right.
And that's basically what germinated the idea for gift cards for giving for me.
Yeah. Love it. Well, that's about all the time that we do have. Kyle, thanks so much for kind of leading us in this path where hopefully in a much more hopeful place, because I do think that as hard as it is and as many more, unfortunately, many more challenges lay ahead. We're not anywhere close to the end of this, I'm afraid. But there are still things to be hopeful and optimistic about. Any other last things to mention before we go? And like I said, that we will have a list of resources on this episode for folks who are listening.
Yeah, I would just drop the COVID-19 business resource page on the Canby Chamber, including everything from, slideshows showing you how to apply for SBA loans, to the applications, to workplace safety, to cybersecurity, whatever kind of information you're looking for, go ahead and pop in there. And if it's missing, contact me. I'll go find it for you.
Cool. Yep. All right, Kyle. Well, thank you so much for the information. Thanks for taking time out from your Rocky Balboa workout to talk to us.
I am a picture of fitness. Right? I can say that on a phone interview.
Right. Right. I'm here with Derek Hill at Advantage Mortgage, and you had some advice you were wanting to put out there to prospective home buyers.
Yeah, it's so crazy out there right now. The housing market is just blazing fast, especially in the first-time home buyer range of prices.
Oh, cool.
So it's imperative that you find out all the ins and outs. How much can you afford? What's your payment range that you want to be in? What type of loan program you're qualified for? Because there's a lot of no money down loan programs that are available, but they really might not be best for you. In my experience, those loans have an increased payment that if they had a little bit of money down, they wouldn't need. But the great thing about Canby is it's eligible for the USDA loan program, which is a no money down loan. But my point is, it's just super important to get it figured out before you start looking, because I've seen customers go find the house they love, they call me and they're like, let's go. Right. And then by the time we get everything dialed in, which can be in 4 hours, that house is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better. So I just want to make sure that consumers know, give us a call. Just give us, let's meet, let's talk about it, let's get everything dialed in so that you know exactly what you're up against, and then you're ready. You can make that offer and kaflooey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Erdman check.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Joining us online now is Caleb Erdmancheck. He is the hospitality pastor at Canby Foursquare Church. How are you, Pastor Erdmancheck?
I'm doing very well today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. You guys are holding up okay over there at Canby Foursquare?
Yes. Yeah. We are innovating and figuring it out as we go.
Right. Right. I think that speaks for a lot of us right now.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, coming up here in just a little bit, Easter is obviously going to look very different for many churches and many faith communities that are celebrating that holiday, and even just celebrating some of the more sort of community aspects of it, like egg hunts. How is Foursquare is one of the ones the past few years that's kind of been in the mix, putting on a big event for the community that's obviously going to look a little different this year.
Yes, it is. Yeah, for the last 3 years, I think, we've put together a huge community egg hunt, and it has been, it's been really fun to get to do that. We get lots of people together. We always do food, and it's just a crazy wild time, but that's obviously going to look different this year.
Right. Right. So tell me a little bit about the planning process and kind of how it started. How early did you sort of sit down and say, okay, the big, you know, the big community thing is a no-go this year. What are we going to do instead?
Yeah, well, the planning process has been in the past. I mean, we start talking about it as early as January, December.
Yeah, sure.
But so we had some really big plans. We already got a bunch of supplies, and that is we've just been shifting. Leadership team gets together, and it used to be just once a month, and now it's every week because things change constantly.
Right.
And so we gather together every week to talk about how we can change our plans, everything about what we just planned to fit the current context.
Right, right, absolutely. So at this point, when we're talking here on what even day is it, Saturday, April 4th, what are things going to look like? And it's going to be on the 9th or the 12th? Tell us the dates.
Yes, yeah, so Easter is on the 12th, right. And we are doing a community egg hunt, but without the hunt. Basically, we've got packages of filled Easter eggs that have been cleaned and sanitized and ready for everybody to play with. They're going to be at a few of the local businesses and organizations for people to pick up when they come in order or when they do the regular thing.
Okay, cool. And so not really hidden, just sort of there for kids to pick up?
Yes, they pick them up there, and then they can bring them home. And then if they want to, they can set up their own private egg hunt at their house, doing the responsible social distancing thing. We got to be respectful of our community and also just really care about those around us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's great. I hate cancellations, man. Like, it's been this past month of March was really hard for me just because I love events. I love people. I love getting together. And I know we can't right now because of the virus and just, you know, the need for everybody to be safe. And I'm totally on board with that. But it just hurts my heart when all this fun stuff just gets canceled. So I love that you guys didn't cancel, that you still are figuring out a way to do it in a way that's safe and still fun for kids and families. So thank you for doing that.
Of course. Yeah. And it really, I mean, the process that we're all in right now is this community grief of everything changing. And we just can't, not only can we not keep up with it, but it's just hard and painful because we had all these expectations for what this time of year was going to be like. And so we might as well just spread a little bit of joy and a little hope during this time.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who described it as, because I was talking to her a few weeks ago, man, I was having a hard time. Honestly, this is like nothing, but at the time I was having a hard time with the NBA games getting canceled
or suspended. Oh my gosh, March Madness.
I was having a hard time with that. And I was sort of even embarrassed to bring it up because it's like there were people even at that time that were starting to lose their jobs or get cut back on hours and stuff. And this was like, you know, I don't get to check the scores of the Trailblazers, you know. but she said she called it the death by a thousand cuts, right? It's like, it's not that each little loss is so much. It's just that there's so many, and it just keeps coming and coming and coming. And I think, as you allude, that can be really tough on people's spirits and on their emotional health.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing that I keep thinking about, I've been listening to Brené Brown a lot. She is, oh my gosh, a leader in mental health and just like wholehearted living.
Yeah, she's got a great podcast out if you guys want to check that out.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I've listened to every episode so far. Awesome. And she talks a lot about comparative suffering too, and how that really, yes, it's there are worse things that happen to other people, but when we look forward to the NBA every year, it still hurts. And when I get laid off from one of my jobs, but not all of them, like I know other people have it worse, and I do get to work, but that I still miss all my other regular jobs. So it's just how it is.
Yeah, of course, it's hard. Just when, like you said, those expectations don't quite go the way that you expect. So, okay. Well, thanks so much for talking to us a little bit about the conversation. Didn't necessarily go exactly where we expected, but that happens sometimes.
Yeah, it sure does.
and about the Easter event that's coming up. So it's gonna be April 9th. So this Friday, when folks are listening to this, is that right?
Friday and Saturday, people can pick up Easter eggs at Wayward Sandwiches, at Oswego Grill in Wilsonville, and then on Saturday morning during their harvest fair, Canby Center will have Easter eggs as well.
Oh, wonderful. Do you know how many that you're putting out there?
We are putting out 500 bags of Easter eggs.
Okay.
So they'll be split up between those three.
Okay. And so they're bags of Easter eggs.
Yes, they're all collected in bags. There's going to be a certain number to each, and then they will each that way every family, each kid can get one of those bags.
Okay, great. And every kid. So it's not one per family. So if families have multiple kids, gotcha. Cool.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks again, Caleb, for your time and for you and the team at Canby Foursquare's work and putting that all together. Is there anything else you want to share with folks before we go?
No, just stay safe and have fun. Let's have some fun during this time.
I think we could all use it.
Definitely.
Appreciate you. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, how about some good news? I think we could all use it. Welcome to the Canby Now Community Board, where we would normally tell you about local events and other things happening around the community. That's much harder to do right now, so we're changing this segment just a little bit. Until normalcy returns, and it will, we want to use this space to share local efforts to help others who are less fortunate or more vulnerable to the outbreak. If you are offering help to the community and want to share information about that here, please get in touch with us by email at info@canbynowpod.com. While many businesses, sadly, are struggling to adapt in a world where an unprecedented number of Oregonians are out of work, and those who have jobs are being urged not to leave home unless absolutely necessary, there are some places where demand has never been higher. Food banks. The St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank at St. Patrick Catholic Church is serving 300 families weekly, which is up from 30% from the pre-COVID days. The Canby Center has shut down 12 of their 16 programs to focus their time and resources on essential food distribution services, where they have already seen the demand nearly triple from an average of 60 families a week to now more than 160. And that's just the beginning. Canby Center Executive Director Ray Keene expects their harvest share distribution to serve at least 200 families each week through April. Looking ahead, we anticipate a significant increase in the number of people seeking help in the coming year, Keene said in a recent video on the center's Facebook page. COVID-19 will impact literally thousands of people in our community, and many of them will be children in low-income families. To support the increased demand for food at the Canby Center, St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank and other Canby food programs, the nonprofit Canby Rotary is asking for support of a newly established COVID-19 relief fund.
The foundation's secretary, Kathy Robinson, said the funds raised will go exclusively towards serving the Cambie community, as well as increase the availability of Rotary Dollars, which are vouchers that augment the food distribution programs. Rotary Dollars can be redeemed at Cutsforth Market for items generally not available through the food banks, such as dairy products and meats. Cambie resident and Rotarian Ron Harris has offered to match any donations made to the club's COVID-19 relief effort, up to $5,000. Cambie Rotary has set a goal of raising $20,000 to support local food banks and other critical programs. For more information on how to contribute, find this story on our website at cambienowpod.com. For most of April, the fleet of buses that serve the Cambie School District will not be in the business of transporting students to and from school. But officials have found a new and welcome use for them, delivering meals. The district has already extended the availability of grab-and-go meals, which are available for all children 18 and under. Those may be picked up between 9 and 11 a.m. at Baker Prairie, Eccles, Trost, and 91 School. District staff said the idea of bus delivery of meals grew out of their commitment to, quote, provide meals to as many children in our community as possible, end quote. On the first day of the delivery service, April 1st, the district delivered or handed out meals for over 1,300 local kids. Each sacked meal contains breakfast and lunch. The district reminds residents to maintain 6 feet of distance when picking up a meal, either at one of the schools or from the new bus delivery service. Bus delivery routes, times, and drop-off points are available on the district's website. Please allow 10 minutes from the scheduled time for bus delivery as drivers adjust to these new and/or combined routes. If you have questions or need additional support, please contact Nutrition Services Department at 503-266-6742 for English, or for Spanish, contact 503-266-0050. The Cambie bid a fond farewell on Friday to Julie Whaling, the director of Cambie Area Transit, or CAT. Whaling retired after a long career in which she successfully secured more than $10 million in grant funding for Cambie's local transit service over the past decade. She was also named Outstanding Public Transportation Manager of the Year by the Oregon Transit Association this past year. Whaling said, "It's been a pleasure to serve. It has been rewarding to do a job that helps people get to the places they need to go," she said. "I have loved working in public transit because I can see the good it does for my neighbors and the community." She and her husband have bought a place in Newport and they hope to retire there full time. She said she's looking forward to walks on the beach with their children, grandchildren, and even great-grandchildren. "I think I speak for all of us in Cambie when I say safe travels and happy trails."
The Cambie Now podcast is brought to you in part by the Wild Hair Saloon, where Cambie goes to eat and have fun. Lifelong Cambie residents Darren and Joan Monin founded the Wild Hair 16 years ago, and as their business has grown and expanded, they've continued to give back to the community they love. They're one of the biggest supporters of school activities, youth sports, local events, and even this podcast. They have a heart for Cambie, plain and simple.
They also have some of the best food and drinks on the planet.
Did I forget to mention that?
No, it's all right. I'm going to mention it. It's no accident that residents voted them the best restaurant and best service through the Cambie Area Chamber of Commerce last year. Happy hour daily from 3 to 6. Kids eat free on Mondays, live music and breakfast on the weekends. And they have great salads and other healthy options to help you keep your New Year's resolutions. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Cambie at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website, thewildhairsaloon.net. The Cambie Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Cambie by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Cambie Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Cambie Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Cambie's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.